This is the Quality News Network. Sunni villagers fought back and killed 10 terrorists this morning after the Al-Qaeda attacked two Sunni villages east of Bakuba. At least 32 Sunnis were killed in the raid before insurgents kidnapped 15 women and children. The newly appointed Army Secretary said he will not lengthen deployment times for soldiers in Iraq. Pete Guerin, a former Texas congressman, said he sees no possibility of extending troop deployments beyond the current 15 months. Adding longer tours put too much stress on soldiers and their families. In southern Afghanistan, two Canadian soldiers and an Afghan interpreter were killed today near Kandahar. Another Canadian soldier and two foreign reporters were wounded in the same incident. The Taliban today released another video of a German hostage urging his family and government to secure his release. Five Afghan employees were also kidnapped more than a month ago, along with a co-worker who was executed. Pakistan's Supreme Court has lifted the imposed exile of a former prime minister ousted by current leader and U.S. ally General Pervez Musharraf. Nawaz Sharif was removed from power 8 years ago by Musharraf, who has been criticized lately for his inability to control Islamic militants. Sharif and another former prime minister are expected to run against Musharraf in upcoming elections. Humanitarian workers employed by aid groups receiving U.S. funding will be required to submit to background checks. The screening process is intended to keep the money out of terrorist hands. Former Hurricane Dean, now a tropical depression, is dissipating over the central mountains of Mexico. Authorities are now concerned the heavy rains drenching the region will cause mudslides. Across the Midwest, more than 1,000 people have been displaced by widespread flooding. Ohio has been hit the hardest. New Jersey's Attorney General has ordered law enforcement to notify federal immigration whenever a lawbreaker is determined to be an illegal immigrant. The U.S. Coast Guard tried to seize a semi-submersible off of Guatemala, but the four-man crew scuttled it before the Coast Guard could board. What they did end up seizing was the crew and bale after bale of cocaine that kept popping to the surface. Firefighters say that cooler temperatures and lighter winds are providing some relief for wildfires out west. Some of the blazes have been burning for 2 months, charring hundreds of thousands of acres. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Didnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
Geologists in Australia have discovered 4 billion-year-old diamonds. The find indicates the Earth may have cooled more rapidly than originally thought. The Consumer Product Safety Commission's recalled more than 300,000 Chinese-made children's products contaminated with lead paint. Included in the new recall are books, spinning tops, pails, and jewelry. A study in the Injury Prevention Journal finds that many recalled toys and other children's products make their way onto eBay. British Airways and Korean Air, which each were fined $300 million for price fixing on international flights, well, now the airlines are admitting to doing so, and they are helping prosecutors as they probe other air carriers. Personal info from more than 1.5 million users of Monster.com has been breached. The thieves used a Trojan horse virus to break in. The rate for a 30-year fixed has dropped to an average 6.52%. That's the lowest it's been since May. And the Federal Reserve funneled $17.25 billion into the financial system today. The infusions came in 3 rounds this morning. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was off just a fraction at 13,235. The NASDAQ lost 11 by the time the bell rang today at 25.41, and the S&P 500 gave up 2. Oil is up 57 cents a gallon at $69.83. There's more at Quality News.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 33 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. We are live this evening. It's Thursday, August the 23rd. I think we are behind and past and through the various problems that our telephone company gave us. And I believe we'll have a steady stream on this end, at least until the next big emergency. It is hot. We have almost another record breaker for the day. The air conditioners are working hard here in North Florida. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you'll find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from past shows, as well as to our chat room and the Head On Radio Network main site. There you can find links to all of the progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are also links there for Strictly Confidential's homepage on MySpace, and you can also locate on the Strictly Confidential. I'm sorry, I'm paying attention to production chat. I shouldn't be. You can also find links to all of the music that you'll find on the show. Again, that's all located at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. The toll-free number is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877, the number 4, head-on. If you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, you could save the studio a dime or a dollar. That's area code 304-658-3333. That's area code 304-658-3333. It rings in West Virginia. The email flows in to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I try to check that during the breaks. It is a somewhat unusual evening. We are running completely tonight on generator power. As I told you about a week ago, one of our listeners very generously donated a new generator to Strictly Confidential for extended power outages, which we are prone to have here in North Florida. This will keep us on the air in the case that one of these huge storms bends up in this direction. As I told you before, the generator is bright yellow, the gas cans are bright red, and I located bright green power cables to run the power into this particular room. We are not without electricity this evening, but it is important to go ahead and get the generator broken in, get about 10 hours on it so I can go ahead and change the break-in oil. It is working beautifully. And as again, even the light that I'm reading from is being run off the generator. It's a full fail-safe mechanism here, and I'm so happy to have it. So we're running on generator tonight as a test. Thank you for sending that along. It's humming along nicely out on the porch. I need to make an announcement this evening. I want to get out a little word for Fierce. If you'll recall, Fierce was one of our guests on a previous show. A wonderful group of people. I remember thinking, you know, Fierce is a GLBT youth of color from New York City. And I thought after I booked Fierce, I thought, oh, my God, I'm much older than they are, and I don't live in an urban area, and I'm not of color. What am I going to talk to? Well, it turned out to be one of the best interview segments we've had on Strictly Confidential. Fierce is looking for LGBT youth of color to blog on their MySpace page. If you fit that description, you might want to contact them. You can locate the Fierce MySpace page at myspace.com/queerpeer. That's QUEERPIER. Or you can contact them at their main site, which is fiercenewyorkcity.org, which is written FIERCENYC.org. And they're interested if you are a LGBT youth of color and about your experiences and harassment by the cops and this, that, and the other. So that is our message then from Fierce. Okay, we did that. I also want to welcome our new listeners this evening. We have a number of people who are listening to the program for the first time, this is a direct result of our guest this evening. There's a huge amount of interest in this guest this evening. I'd like to welcome the new listeners from discomusic.com and also from Glenn Rivera's Multiply page, which is glennrivera.multiply.com. Also the new listeners who are listening from the gaydancefloor.com membership. I'm just bowled over. This man is an incredible man. I am referring to him as one of the world's leading authorities on Italo disco. He's much more humble than that. He does not call himself one of the world's leading authorities on Italo disco, but I think I could demonstrate that, in fact, he is. He will be coming on just shortly. His name is Alex Natikin. Now, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. We will have to check with him when he comes on. Natikin. His background is in education. He studied exercise physiology. And I really should never do this while putting on my glasses in college. He went on to teach for a few years. Academia didn't really agree with Alex. He got put off by the attitudes and the internal politics. He eventually decided to move on. Alex immigrated to the United States in the early 90s. And I don't know what country, but I suspect it's Russia, judging from the last name, but this will be an interesting conversation. He changed his careers when he moved here. He's now working with high school and college-level athletes. He also owns a small software company that designs high-tech software for sports researchers and scientists worldwide. He humbly says that his music background is mostly appreciation. Alex says he's been collecting dance club-oriented 12-inch singles since the late 70s when he started going clubbing. The record collecting is predominantly Italo, and we'll tell you all about that. That's his lifelong passion. This is also interesting in the sense that if he immigrated to the United States in the 90s and began clubbing and listening to this music in the 70s, he has a lot of experience with clubs in the other side of the pond, so that should be. He also humbly says, in terms of music production, I can only take credit for restoring the lost sombrero mixes from scratch. Wait till you hear this. These were released on tape only in Italy in 1984. They did not survive well into the current day and age. The only known existing copy sounds absolutely horrible. He remixed the entire set. It's three tapes, sides A and B of the three tapes, 45 minutes per tape, or per side, rather, to the exact precision of the original. Now, you may have to have been a DJ or have an audio engineering background to appreciate what that means. Let me tell you some more. It took him 2 years just to get the material together and to complete the job. You see, in order to recreate someone's remixes, you have to have the sources have to be exactly the same as what the original DJ who was doing the mix had. Therefore, it took him a couple of years from talking to collectors from dozens of countries, dozens of collectors, to locate all of the tracks of the exact same versions that were used to compile the remix he was recreating. He says he's very thankful for their help. But when he says he has created an exact precision remix of the original, what he is saying here is that you can actually put the two tapes in, the original, which is actually poor quality, and his new remix, which he did from scratch, play them simultaneously, and there is no phasing. Now, you may have to know a little bit about audio to know about phasing, but this means that his remix is accurate down to the waveform. It's not an approximate remix. It's not sounds good, sounds like the original. This man labored for 2 years to create an exact remix that when played together with the original, it doesn't even phase. This is mind-boggling to me, absolutely mind-boggling. Any DJ would agree. He's also from the early 90s. He became active on the Internet. That's a long time ago for the Internet. In 2000, he launched his site Euroflash. He calls it version 1.0 with a smile. By the way, that site is www.euroflash.net. That is www.euro-flash.net. He did that when he realized how little information there was on the Internet about Italo disco. He wanted to learn more. He wanted to share what he knew with other people who were interested in the genre. and he wanted to create a sort of a tallow knowledge repository. His site, he laughingly refers to as probably 4.0 by now, and it's a community of folks who listen to Italo music. But are you sitting down? In April of 2006, Euroflash served 1 million pages. That's right. The site served 1 million pages worldwide as a repository of information on this type of music. It took him 6 years to reach that level of communication, or that level of hits. That's a major milestone for a niche site, I should say so. He says that these days his site gets about 50,000 hits monthly, and he smiles and says, I guess we're doing something right. Indeed, Alex, I think you are doing something right. Alex is happily married and lives with his wife, who is a fashion designer in Portland, Oregon, my old stomping grounds. And there's so much to, you know, it's just amazing. You see, back in the day when I was DJing, you know, that was pre-internet, I knew I liked the music, but I didn't know what I was playing. And this is a wonderful opportunity for me to learn more about it. And in any case, with no more delay, Alex, welcome to Strictly Confidential. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Yes, Peter. Hello.
Hello to you, sir. I'm so glad you could join us. You just amaze me. Since I've discovered you, you were referred to me by our dear friend Glenn Rivera, who also referred Cynthia Manley to this uh-huh. show, and anyone that Glenn sends along, I give a close look to, because they're always just amazing people. You know, your background here, and why don't you start by telling us what Italo Disco is? No, let's not start there. Let's start from where you're from, and how do you pronounce your last name?
Yes, I'm originally from Belarus, but that's USSR, and I think you got it right first time. It's Nikitin. But, you know, it's such a name. It's like for Russian to pronounce Mississippi. You're always going to miss something. So it's very common. It's a common name for Russians, but it's a very difficult name for Americans. I don't know why.
It was difficult for me. In order to pronounce it tonight, I had to type it out and put spaces in it so that I wouldn't stumble over it too badly at the beginning of the show. You moved here in the 90s, you say?
Right, in the 90s.
And at that point, you'd had a long history with this type of music.
Yes. Yes, I had. And as you know, at the time, it was just music. We were young. We were just listening to all kinds of stuff, always looking for a new flavor, you know, flavor of the year, flavor of the month. And my beginning with Italo Disco was actually in Italy. I was there in the competition. I was an athlete formerly, and I was in the cab, and I heard that really something new, just a new vibe of music, and I asked the cab driver, what is this? And he said, well, you know, I have those tapes that I sell to tourists. Would you like to buy one? So I bought one. I brought it home. And the one of the songs on the tape that really caught my attention, and I would suppose it kind of sparked my interest, was Gazebo. The title of the song was I Like Chopin. And probably to get an idea of what it was, and we should probably cue the song now. If Agnes could cue the song, we would listen to it.
Yes, and absolutely, Agnes. Go ahead and do that. I have told Alex to go ahead and take charge of cueing music, because Agnes is in charge of a number of tracks this evening. So absolutely, let Alex cue you in on the tracks, Agnes. Ah, you missed the title. Okay, not a problem. It is the Gazebo track.
Gazebo.
And it is the Gazebo track called I Like Chopin.
I Like Chopin.
never say goodbye to desire when we are together. Rainy days growing in your eyes. Tell me where's the way?
Wow, so you heard that the first time then in a cab, and you bought the tape from the cab driver?
Yes, and I was hooked. That was it. And I just started to look for asking people, what is this? Well, in Russia, nobody has heard about it. It's just kind of a new thing, like new wave. There was no name for it. And, I didn't have much money at the time, but I definitely made sure that I bought the Gazebo's album. And that was my first record, first LP from Gazebo, and it was tremendous. It had the mystery, it had that bass, it had totally new arrangement. The synthesizer was so prominent, piano, everything was just total magic, and also nothing like anything I've heard before. In the sense of, it was very different. As you can
hear. I completely
agree.
It has a very ethereal quality. I think one of the first questions the listeners will probably want to know is, it was sung in English.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Right. And an interesting side note about Gazebo, he was a child and born in a family of diplomats, so he's very fluent in English. His name is Paul Mazzolini. He's very very charismatic man, really talented, he fit really well into that persona, even though this was not his first production. But I think it's the first time when he hit big with this first album, Paul Mazzolini as Gazebo.
When did he come out with Masterpiece? That's a track that I remember playing by Gazebo.
It's 1983. That song Masterpiece is in the same album, and also that has a very interesting story about this, is that when Paul Mazzolini met another Italian composer, his name is Pierluigi Giambini. Giambini wrote all the music, and it has just very particular sound to it. Everything by Gazebo you would hear, it was written by Pierluigi Giambini. And he basically, they put together some songs and they started shopping for the record label, and that's where he signed with the Baby Records, which is Italian company Baby Records, in 1983. And the time with Baby Records was one of the most dynamic record companies in Italy, and basically he wanted to find a company that would promote him as an artist, and which proved to be very difficult at the time. So he went to Milan, because he went to Milan to meet Freddy Nagier, was the owner of the record company. So and during the meeting, the record company owner asked Paul, "Can you dance?" And Paul said no. And Freddy frowned. Then he asked, "Well, what can you do in front of television camera?" And Gazebo said, "Well, I won't move a muscle. I'll just want the camera just looking into my eyes." So, and he started sweating during that dialogue. So Freddy says, "Well, you're crazy." And then basically, he left the building. And that was his first record deal. I suppose he took the liking of to Gazebo, and I think it's proven to be one of the biggest selling and one of the most mainstream artists from Italian disco.
Well,
that's kind of a side note, and that information came from the interview with Gazebo done by my friend from Croatia, Zdelko Vukovic. He's really talented guy, and really great information, great interviews.
Very, very interesting. And this first exposure for you to gazebo. It's interesting that it was in a cab and not in a club. So the cab driver, did he get this mixed? It was a tape that he purchased in a club.
Likely. And apparently that was a side business for some DJs to sell their sets. And I know that there was also, there's a parallel dimension, actually two other parallel dimensions to Italo Disco. What you've heard is more of a kind of mainstream radio friendly. And the other dimension to it would be Club Cosmic that was led by another Italian DJ, Daniele Baldelli. And his music would even be called cosmic music, which is a really just a totally eclectic blend of Afro, disco, Italo. His records been played at 45 records were played at 33 1/3, and sometimes the three records would be played at the same time. And another parallel dimension to you would be electro, which is all were really, really subtle differences, but they're very audible differences. And I think that's what, so the club was one of the biggest driving forces. I think if we could play just an example of what the parallel dimension to Italo Disco, and we can start from electro by San Lashan and the track called Catch.
Okay, that's fine.
And I think that's a tremendous example.
Thank you. Before we do, I think some of our listeners will probably want to know why we continue to refer to it as Italo rather than Italian.
Right. I think that the term was coined by Bernard Mikulski. He was a German owner of the ZYX record company because he wanted to market this type of music to more of a mass level. And before Italo disco or Italian disco, I don't know why, it was called spaghetti dance. Probably something like spaghetti westerns, you know?
Yes.
But it's a silly name, and it certainly cannot be taken seriously. So he released on his label ZYX the best of Italo disco. And the name really caught on, and the name was really decorated in the form of Italian flags with the white and green and red, and really caught on and became somewhat of a staple. So people would look for that kind of label and buy a record. So, and that's, I guess, from that point on, it caught on.
Excellent. And the track that you just asked for was that Kodo, Chinese Revenge?
Or we can play either San Lashan or Koto. Koto would be an example played in Cosmic, Club Cosmic.
Okay, so we should use the Koto and Chinese Revenge, right?
Yes, it's great.
Okay, thank you.
We'll be right back.
Thank you. And before we, I want to point out that, listeners can call in and talk with Alex. The toll-free number is 877, the number 4, head-on, or 877-443-2366. That's toll-free. Or if you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, you can use area code 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. And back to you, Alex. That's a beautiful, absolutely beautiful track, and I had never heard it before until you sent that music to the studio.
Yeah, it's by Koto, and the real name of the artist is Anfran de Maiola. Very talented keyboardist. He plays everything himself. It's a synthesizer, and what you hear is just a very, very slow, laid-back pace. That was one of his first productions. And that was another parallel dimension. This is what you would hear in the Club Cosmic, or maybe even at some other places. But at the time, I don't think it was not necessarily on the radio or as radio-friendly. And I think another parallel dimension to Italo disco is electro. And it's recently been a great resurrection of that genre, and especially in Holland. Holland is a hotbed for dance music, I think, in my opinion, in general, and I think it probably in great length Italians should thank the Dutch for keeping that Italian music, Italo disco, alive, because I think there are more fans of Italo disco music in Holland than anywhere on earth, I swear.
Very interesting. Just tell me before we'll run that track. I think you, Agnes, I think picked that up. But tell me, was there a division between the types of clubs this music was played in when you were there? Did this tend to be played in the gay clubs, or was this a mix? Was there that division? How did that work?
Well, you know, it's a good question, Peter. Since I've never went to clubs in Italy, because I was only going to competition, and you know, you go in and out, basically. You don't get to see much of the city. So all I could do is just make a quick stop at the record shops and then go back. But talking to friends and talking to people that's still in Europe, I don't think there was a particular division that this music would play in gay clubs or not. I don't think in Europe this music has any particular stigma as it is in the United States. I would say that Italo disco would be predominantly played at the gay clubs here in the United States, or probably even in the United Kingdom, in England. But there is no stigma associated with that, with gay or straight in Europe, as not as much.
Very interesting.
If at all.
Very, very interesting, Alex. And you had referred to a track. Did you want Agnes to run another one at this point?
Right, and that would be Saint Lachan. And the track is Catch. And listen to this absolutely out of this world wicked synthesizer. And that song's been cited by many artists of today who are involved in what you call electro clash or electro as a great undying source of inspiration. So if we could listen to that's also one of my absolute favorite tracks from Italo Electro.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alex, you're getting some compliments in the chat room about your voice. They love your voice.
I appreciate it. It's good.
they love the music and they love the voice. You know, you mentioned synthesizers just as we went into that section, and I've noticed at your website you have a whole section, page after page, devoted to just synthesizers. The specifications, actual photographs of them, amazing names, the
yes.
Emulator 2, the Prophet 5, the Oberheim, just amazing. Anybody who is interested at all in this, you should visit the site to look through the selection of these older synthesizers. Just amazing stuff from back in the 80s.
And I think, Peter, you know, I did it in response to the new young generation of fans who are also kind of amateur and some professional musicians. They like the sound, they wanted to replicate the type of sound, and they couldn't do with the equipment that is available today. So I would often get an email and asking that song, what did they use, do you have a record? So I would say, well, I look at the record, maybe they listed it in credits. So I dug through my about 4,000-5,000 record collection, and I looked through the sleeves, and I started, and I also asked some of my friends to do the same, if we could come up with some of the most commonly used synthesizers at the time, because I think synthesizer was a very important instrument for Italo disco. I think that was the instrument.
Well, some of these are amazing. Some of them even go back to having the walnut cases. You could,
yes.
It really marks it in time, doesn't it, forever?
Yes, and I think some of them now probably cost as much as an automobile. So you can imagine. And that's true. So that was done really in response to the fans and actually producers.
Well, the music is absolutely beautiful. Yeah, I'd not heard that track before either, and it's certainly one that I would have played. It has such a special musical quality to it that is often not heard in today's music.
No, not often. And another thing, a side note about Stan Lachan, it's a Franco and Venice Capinich, Italian couple. They are the principal owners of the record label called Super Radio. And that Super Radio record label has been for years a sort of a cult. It had just strong following. Collectors all over the world would be just trying to find those records. And one of my really good friends, close friends, Dennis Vandenberg, is from Holland. He was a close friend of Franco and Venice, and he convinced them to perhaps to kind of reopen the label and maybe help themselves to sell the remaining stock of the records, and they did. And in fact, they were so impressed with the enthusiasm of the fans, so they started writing even new tracks, which are absolutely fantastic, and they sound just like you were in the 1983, 1984. It's amazing. Very talented people. Very talented couple.
I see. One thing I'm finding out, now that I've discovered you and all the wonderful information on your site, and it is just a treasure trove, is this whole thing about disco sucks and the anti-disco movement did not happen in Europe.
No, it didn't, really. It really did not. In fact, I learned about it here. How I learned it is actually pretty simple. When I moved to Portland in the early 90s, you know, I always wanted just to kind of rebuild my collection, just get some CDs. So I go to a local store and say, well, do you have any disco music, Italian disco music? And I got a really look. And I thought, well, maybe I have like a piece of spaghetti on my face or something. But I really got that look, and I didn't get it at first. And then, but later, people, you know, the co-workers told me, Alex, you know, that this kind of music you're playing and you're looking for, it's just really not very cool. It's not very hip.
Exactly.
So, you know, and then I started thinking why. I would ask why, and because disco sucks. I'm thinking, well, what does it exactly mean? And then I started digging and reading and talking to people, and I learned about the backlash that happened in the late 70s in Chicago, and I think, with the whole, and that explained me a lot of things.
Well, I had no idea about that event in Chicago. In fact, it was a major clue to me. I'd always, in the back of my mind, felt that it was some sort of anti-gay or anti-black or tell us about that event in Chicago. And now that I know about it, it makes so much sense to me. Tell us about it, please.
Right. Well, it's basically what I know about it is what I learned. And from reading books and just the internet is that the in a nutshell that most people believe that was kind of a radical move in the late 70s to end the disco era in the United States, and it was viewed by many as a really sort of an attempt by the macho rock lovers to sort of stamp out gay liberation and black pride movement. And I usually am diligent about what I put on my site. I do my research, and I read several books in print, but one by Tim Robbins and another by two British writers, Bill Brewster and another fellow. His name escapes me. And they seem to really concur on the events, and reading opinions of people who lived through the time. That's what makes me be really convinced. That's what it was. And so the event itself in Comiskey Park was staged by a radio DJ. His name was Steve Dahl. He lost his position with the radio because basically they just refused to play rock and wanted to play be strictly disco, dance music, and he really had it. So he kind of rallied up the troops made a sort of a promotion of a disco demolition night. So anybody who could bring some unwanted records on the baseball game and in intermission of the game, they would pile them up and burn them, kind of blow them. That rally caused such a commotion that the game was canceled and the enraged crowd began just to tear up the stadium.
This is amazing to me, and apparently there was a big banner. They had unfurled a large banner there before the destruction started that said "Disco sucked." This was kind of like a macho set of sports fans that were going to stamp out. I guess they thought by stamping out disco, they could stamp out the gay liberation movement. Or
went through the heads. And I think those events always look back at the rearview mirror, I suppose, and I think I would say that probably that at that point disco music has reached really saturation point, and a lot of people were unhappy with it. Radio DJs were unhappy, and probably the quality of music went down as well. And I think is just it was that pendulum sort of swung the other way.
But in Europe, it had not wound down. It was developing into more and more beautiful forms.
Not at all. And in fact, Europe loves the disco. Europe loves the funk. I don't know if you remember, it was a very peculiar moment that my wife and I sort of celebrated. It was the Olympic Games opening in Italy. And they played the medley of all the classic funk and disco American songs as the teams marched on. And I thought that was a fantastic tribute, kind of a unifying moment for the world. And that's the way how we perceived it, but I don't know how other people perceived it. I thought it was a great, great thing. And it shows absolutely no stigma attached to that music.
Very interesting, and I'm reading in your site also that after this huge backlash, is this what that you mentioned Bobby Orlando or Bobby O, as we more commonly know him, and Patrick Cowley, they were introducing it here in the American disco.
Well, what happened is I think they changed the music. Patrick Cowley introduced the strong synthesizer into the music. So they took the brass and strings and what you would commonly think of disco music, and then that would be just a synthesizer with a strong kick drum and the hi-hats. And Bobby Orlando on the East Coast would do his high energy, real powerful, dynamic songs, and that became dance. Not deep.
Very interesting.
It became high energy. So high energy was okay.
Yes, that, in fact, that is so true. I'm so glad you said that. I remember when I was DJing in Portland in the 80s, and we referred to it as high energy rather than referring to it as disco, because there's a certain amount of stain attached to the word disco, which always
exactly.
really ticked me off.
Exactly. And the music once again reinvented itself and went underground. And as we're talking about Italian disco music, all of it was just really basically just it's a very, very small underground movement that Italians just they're so preeminently creative, and they like the music, they're very musical people, and they put out experimenting to the end. They take it to the next level, and they started making those records, and the records were started selling because. In Chicago, for example, where what was an incredible phenomena of Hot Mix 5 happening, there these guys were all competing for new sounds, looking for new records. Where the DJs, the five DJs, would play live mixes on the radio, and then nothing like that was happening anywhere else. And in competition as a DJ, Peter, you always look for fresh sound.
Well,
so,
yes,
and they invariably turned to some Italian imports, and Italian records were very DJ friendly. So the Italians are really clever, and they recognize the DJs looking for more material that they can tweak, mix, blend. So this way they would entice the DJ to buy, and I think we could cue the great example of what that Italian style, what kind of innovation happened at the time, and this sort of harmonic mixing would be happening on BMX shows, Saturday Live 8 No Jive, and if Agnes would cue Mirage into Fun Fun blend, we would enjoy that piece.
I see the woman.
Wow. Absolutely wow. That takes me back. I've got to tell you that. That music means so much to me. And I should point out, too, that Glenn Rivera, the world's most fabulous DJ, just joined us in the chat room. So you folks who are listening, if you'd like to chat with Glenn, all you have to do is stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on chat room. You'll find Glenn Rivera. Or you can pick up the phone and dial 877, the number 4, head on. That's toll free to Strictly Confidential, and talk with Alex, who is the world's most knowledgeable person on Italo. Well, who could ask for more?
I appreciate it, Peter.
Yeah, that track, honest to God, that took me. Oh God, the music was so joyful. There was so much joy in it, and I get what you're saying about the whole. You know, disco had sort of gotten sort of standardized to a degree, but the whole and in the early '80s, I mean, it's so true what you're saying. Everybody was looking for imports. Have you got the import version of it? And it was like gold if you could find an import version of any of this stuff.
Right, because I think innovation, music innovation moved overseas. And there's one peculiar thing about Italian disco is that you've heard two tracks. One is called Mirage, and the title song called Woman, and another is Fun Fun, Happy Station. But the singer was the same. It was Ivana Spagna. That's another mystery, that you have dozens of different titles, different bands, Fan Fan, Mirage, all kinds of things, and that would be the same people behind, those productions, those songs.
So you're saying the artists, the record, and yes, you do mention this in your site, that actually the record companies were promoting a brand rather than an artist, and if an artist got too popular or too powerful, there were plenty of great singers, I think is the way you phrased it, and they would just get another singer to do that singer's and market
that's
it
right.
as that.
That's right.
That's
and
amazing.
You remember that, I know in Europe it was kind of a scandal with Milli Vanilli. But in Italy, it's been done all the time. And in fact, probably one of the biggest sellers, Italo disco, the artist named Dan Harrow. He actually, if you look at all his discography, there were three different vocalists. In fact, there are four. I don't know the most recent one because it's a little too new, but the others were Chuck Rolando. He had a contact with the Full Time Records at the time. I think then Silvio Pozzoli, another Italian, and an American living in Italy. His name is Tom Hooker, who's really, in my opinion, a really tremendous, tremendous artist. Not just a singer, but he's just a tremendous artist. A great, really interesting personality. He has a lot to say. So that is not it was not uncommon. If someone commands higher fees, they just replace an artist and put a different, like Fun Fun, for example, as the band that you know that you call it was really joyful. There are three different singers: Ivana Spagna, or Antonella Pepe, or Angela Parisi, and it, depending on the time frame.
Yeah.
Of their albums, like more recent albums, it was not Ivana Spagna, but more early albums were sang by her. And that's another mystery about Italian disco that we all love, and we're always trying to unearth all those little bits of information, talking to producers, well, it's great.
I'll be damned. That is just amazing to me. I had no idea. So Fun Fun was not necessarily Fun Fun than on the next record. This just blows me away.
No, it wasn't.
We had someone in the chat room a couple of weeks ago talking about Silver Connection, and I see you referenced Silver Connection as part of the German school, the German influence.
That's right.
Can you tell us something about that? Because apparently one German band was considered to be the world's cheesiest disco band of all time.
which probably Silver Convention could be. You know, the thing is, the German, and I don't really want to offend any Germans, but I don't think necessarily their musicians are the most creative of all, that they have a great formula and they follow it to the T, and they do a really great job. But sometimes when something backfires, and it can really sound cheesy, like Genghis Khan, for example. Genghis Khan was probably one of the cheesiest disco albums, but in a way, I like cheese, so it's okay with me.
Very good point.
But certain things are just really a little bit too cheesy, and in fact, I think there was a lot of that out of Germany, unfortunately.
I see. So while we were over here burning albums and riding around on the highways with Disco Sucks bumper stickers, the folks in Europe were just having a good time and dancing. Is that about to sum that up?
They're having a great time, and what a time that was. And I'm glad that they did, and I think that Italian disco was basically, I think the Disco Sucks kind of gave way for the new sound, and Italian disco was one of those new musical trends that emerged from the demise of disco.
I have a question for you. Someone sent me a track quite a while back, and it's labeled as Italo disco, and I suppose it could be, but I don't know it to be. And I wanted to ask you about it. It's Norma Lewis doing Tonight on Dancing with the Desperate, I believe it's called. Was that Italo?
No. If Norma Lewis is not Italian, or the record is not produced by Italian, the collectors, or what you call fans, would not really recognize it as Italo disco. It could be anything else. Could be Euro. Could be anything. But Italian disco, really, in a way, in an Italo snob way, is what was produced in Italy by the Italians.
I see. Well, and that was your point when we were conversing prior to your appearing on the show. We were talking about the Wikipedia definition,
right,
of Italo, and a Wikipedia attempts to group everything in Europe as one big name called Italo, as best I can tell.
Right, but that's it's probably they have the merit. But if you talk to any serious fan, and it's almost sinful, and I hate to use this word, but it's almost sacrilegious to do that. It's basically everyone agreed, so to speak, that Italo disco was made in Italy by the Italians, and that's it. That was the end of the argument. Anything else is Euro disco or whatever the style
is. But here we called it high energy. I remember it clearly.
This label
is just a wealth of new information for me. I had absolutely no idea. Well, by all means, go on with some of the tracks and telling us the story. I keep interrupting you because it's just so interesting. I keep taking you in tangents.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that the whole thing started in a way. The explosion happened with the track. The Italian explosion happened with the track by Raff called "Self Control," and I think, interviewing different artists, that's kind of my hobby. They all sort of alluded that Raff inspired them, that they could do it too. And the track is "Self Control" by Raff. Even Laura Branigan, late Laura Branigan, who passed away a few years, she covered it, and it was a minor hit in the United States.
Well, I have to tell you, that came as a huge shock to me. I always was under the impression that Laura Branigan invented that track. I had absolutely no idea it was a cover.
It was a cover, big time. And it was a good cover, but I think Raff had the raw sound, and he had that Italian passion. He feels deep, and you can hear it. And
wonderful.
If we could possibly play the track, that would be really fantastic.
Alex, that is absolutely wonderful. You know, to hear a male vocalist do that brings on a whole different dimension. And our production chat, Agnes is saying that she remembers hearing that version back in the 80s, and somehow she heard it in West Virginia, and I didn't hear it on the West Coast. I feel pretty gypped.
Well, exactly. You were in the West Coast. That explains it.
Ah.
I mean, probably in Portland, that explains it.
Yes. Yes, I was in Portland. So it was not a West Coast thing at all then. And there is a difference between East and West Coast. I found that out.
Absolutely. I think that music was more popular in the East Coast. And I think a lot of records in my collection came with the Vinyl Mania stickers. And Vinyl Mania was a store in New York City, and which was actually located on close to former site of the Paradise Garage. And so all those imports were coming from here, and I got those records in the 90s. A lot of them bought them in the 90s. So isn't that, I think it's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing to me. And Alex, it's amazing to me also that the depth that you have about even the way it worked here in the United States is just amazing to me. I had no clue that it was because the vendors were primarily on the East Coast for this, and you're absolutely right. Back on the West Coast, we used to talk about how there were differences between, you know, what was being played in the, except for the, you know, huge super hits like what It's Raining Men. Obviously, that was being played everywhere, but things like but I didn't know what the differences were. I wasn't on the East Coast.
Right. Well, you know, I think all that comes from talking to friends, collectors, and fans, and they always, I find it very intriguing to learn about these differences, and I think it also explains a lot of things, what was popular, why, and that particular song by Raf, Self Control, you know, at the time, that was just that song, it was just so popular, it was such a big trend, and which ultimately gave way to the ultimate Oh Wow Wow record is by Baltimora, Tarzan Boy, and I think
that was fascinating to me. I saw it on your site. Yes, I'm sorry to talk to you, it's just that I was so fascinated. There tended to be waves of a particular sound, like you're saying Oh Wow Wow, and there'd be 3 months or 2 months of, like, every new remix had that phrase in it. It'd be like phrase of the month. How did you put it? And of course, Baltimore, Agnes has that track if you want to run. But that was the ultimate song. It was, wasn't it, Alex?
Absolutely. And in fact, Peter, that's the only song by Baltimora, Tarzan Boy, the only Italian song at the time that was charted in the United States. That's the only one. And probably really due to its featuring in the TV commercial by Toyota, I think. And I think that that track was number 12 in the charts. And that was it.
That's amazing.
For Italian disco in America.
That's amazing. I had heard that track, just the OOO part, played on another progressive network. There's a progressive network called Nova M during one of their musical breaks, they were playing just that OOO part, you know, and I thought, how interesting is that? They're playing Baltimore, but they're not really playing Baltimore.
Right. They've taken that snippet because it's so catchy. It's so energetic. And I think a lot of Italian records had that kind of quality. Not all, but a lot of them. I also recently saw a thread on the discomusic.com which I'm a frequent visitor, and they were talking about the sleaze versus morning music, and our mutual friend Glenn Rivera, in my estimation, is the authority on the morning music.
He has sent me tracks that have just melted my heart. Some of the most beautiful stuff, and I've used some here on the show. Not nearly all of it, but I'm going to get to it eventually.
Right, some
marvelous stuff.
A lot of the sleaze, or what you call morning music, the tracks are Italian, like Duo, Walking, Hemil, Keep on Rocking, Gazebo Masterpiece, Robert Miles, which is more recent, he is also Italian. Sonia Bilolo, Italian. Jackie Moore, which is an alias of Dora Carofiglio, and also Suzanne Mills, which is an ultimate sleaze record called Forever. And Gaz Nevada, I See Love Affair, Valerie Dorr, which is, again, once again, Dora Carofiglio, and My Mind, Hypnotic Tango. These are all Italian records. These are all
wow.
Italian disco.
Just amazes me. And you know, most of those I've never heard. I've just never heard. I feel so left out. I'm so glad I'm catching up with it, though.
Well, Peter, I will help you. So don't worry. We will fill the gap.
That's very kind of you. That would be a large project. Glenn has tried, bless his heart, Glenn has made a huge effort to fill in the missing years.
Well, you know, and he's a generous friend, and he helps me too to fill many gaps as well. And as you know, the Italian disco had really just a few years of what you call prominence, and which was on the radio, and it's a great summer music, and then it probably followed the track of disco music. I think the productions were getting worse, and the records were just flooding the market, and the sound was changing, and you know how music fans are. It's a very fickle bunch. They follow to the next flavor, and the disco Italo disco music went south.
Well, one interesting point I have discovered in reading through your site is what PWL means. I had no idea it stands for Pete Waterman.
I always wondered
what PWL mixes were.
Right, and all those mixes, right?
Yes.
Right, all these mixes and all very particular style of mixing, which is really good. I think very energetic, but as a DJ, and you know it, when you try to mix PWL track into it, just brings such a different energy and into it. Sometimes it's very hard to mix out.
Yes, sometimes
because everything sounds very flat. You have to put some kind of really dramatic break up after it. PWL, but I love their mixes. They really had the talent of taking the best part of the song and really bring it up to the surface and for the listener to enjoy.
I've discovered from your site too that Taps with My Forbidden Lover was actually Canadian. I had no idea. I've always loved that song. In fact, I used it on a Strictly Confidential promo before this show aired. I used it as background track.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I've been in touch with Vincent DiGiorgio. The name is really known to many people and fans of in the 80s of high energy music. And Vincent was the owner of Power Records Canada. Tremendous person, very talented musician, and very knowledgeable. So he gave a lot of inside scoop on what was going on and how they would select different records and what would work, what would not. And just really interesting. He was also a DJ, really interesting history, very interesting person. So and he was one of the people. He was very instrumental to make way for Taps. For the band Taps, Alan Coelho was one of the people.
Yes, and I'm also noticing too, and I didn't know this. Ramshorn records were always to be treasured back in the day, and I'm finding out that that's Dutch. The things I'm finding out here just amaze me.
Right, it's Dutch, and they're also they featured many really cool remixes. In fact, some of the I almost have maybe 20 or 30. Original Italian records, and then Ramshorn remix. They would always feature, and I think Dutch have really tremendous talent for mixing. And you know, I think one of the preeminent mix masters is Ben Liebrand, and he sort of in another gentleman was in the 90s, Peter Schlachhaus. Unfortunately, he died in the accident, and he is not around. But he was a very tremendously talented. Many Dutch refer him as the man. I don't know if you remember, it was a song by Hit House, Jack to the... gosh.
Sometimes it isn't the tip of
your
tongue.
To the Sound of the Underground.
That was
a big house hit, and that by Peter Schlachhaus. But he also made a number of mixes, different break mixes, volume 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, and he used a lot of Italian breaks. It was really tremendous. So the Dutch have a great history of mix and remix, and they're very talented people. Very talented.
I see. Well, also on your site, you have interviewed a number of the who's who's in mixing and from Europe. And one is a fellow named Tony, who is involved with Bobby O. He was a composer. Because Bobby O's music was always... Was Bobby from Europe also?
No. Bob Orlando is American. And Tony Marinello is the gentleman. He lives in New York. He's a good friend. Really, I think it's a great interview. Tremendous, tremendous man. What is interesting is that when you're interviewing the former stars of the dance music, some of them, not composers but the artists, kind of speak about that music with a somewhat lack of interest. I didn't sense a lot of passion. They, in a way, almost they feel a little bit embarrassed about it.
Oh.
But Tony Marinello has totally different feeling and view on this music. He absolutely loves it. So in our conversations, we've always kind of talked about why did this music die, and what really happened? Why house music became so popular, and why would it take by the storm not just the United States but also Europe? And I think one of the common thing that we've found is that it's probably passion, because the guys in Chicago, when they were making house records, they absolutely loved it. They were bad records. They were done, at slow speed, and then playing by one finger, and they just in the most primitive equipment. But the passion and energy was amazing, and people absolutely loved it, and they went all the way to promote it. But many Italian records were somewhat were.
Well, that's
only,
a very interesting
course,
point.
I wouldn't want to generalize, and I think, probably in the back of the mind, I think some of these Italian musicians would rather be making rock records, and I think maybe that was one of the reasons why Italo didn't really leave that long. Who knows? Or maybe they were way ahead of the time.
Reminds me of a remark that Glenn made once. He occasionally makes remarks that stick in my mind forever. He said that he felt that the BPM of a song, beats per minute, of course, were in no way the indicator of the energy. And you're almost referring to that energy as being the commitment, aren't you?
Right, and probably that was felt. Even though it's not, I wouldn't want to generalize or over generalize, but I think that was probably one of the reasons. Even though the recent there were recent attempts by fans and collectors and DJs to bring back those artists from retirement and make some new records, and
wow.
I think there is one company in Finland done by what I would call the most knowledgeable person on Italo disco in the world. His name is Kimmo Salo, and his company is Flashback Records. They brought very popular musicians in the past to today, and they found some unreleased material, and they releasing it now. And it's very good. It's very fun. It's not necessarily the same, but it's very good. And another company is out of Holland. It's called Eventi d'Azzurro Records. And basically started by also two really great collectors of Italian disco music, very knowledgeable people, you know, really dedicated fanatics, and the music really works. One of the songs that I would really like to play is Swan, which is Giancarlo Cinelli. He's a regional Italian singer, really great person, and the song was written many years ago but never released, and Savino DJ from Holland is half Italian, you know, half Dutch, so you can actually classify record is fully Italian. And they released a song called Shining Star on the Venti d'Azzurro Records. It's a terrific piece, and if Agnes could play it, you would hear what kind of tremendous potential in that music even today.
Wonderful. And so, Alex, that was a previously unreleased track?
Right, but it's totally rearranged in 2006. And you hear it has everything. It has the spirit of Italo. It has the style. It has the vocal, a little bit of accent. But I think it adds a great charm. And, you know, and that was one of the records that had been recently completely sold out. So the fans, I think, just unanimously agreed that was, you know, a great comeback. And I think that's a tribute. When the fans vote with their money, I think it speaks for something.
Well, an interesting point to me, Alex, I have to ask, the huge number of hits that your site receives, do a large number of them come from Europe?
It's kind of worldwide, and I think a lot of it is returning hits, but I think probably, I'd say, 4,000 to 5,000 monthly new hits.
Wow.
I don't really... Honestly, Peter, I'm thinking I don't even know who are these people. You know?
Yeah,
because
you gotta
I swear to you, I was so excited about our show because I can talk to somebody about the music for an extended period of time. I have you know, any friend of disco music in the city is my friend, and I have limited acquaintanceship. You know, and in Italian disco, most people don't even know. So I'm very impressed, and if you ask me who are these people, I don't really know, but I'm always welcome them on the site.
Well, the word certainly went out today.
It amazes me.
I would guess that a large number of them are listening to you or will be listening to you. This program is available as a replay off the Strictly Confidential site Anyone can click on the calendar date and call it up. The archive will be posted at some point tomorrow. And a lot of people listen to this off of iTunes, too. We don't even always have a way of accurately tracking the people who are not listening live because so many people listen at other times. It's just not a convenient time for some.
That's great.
And interestingly enough, Alex, we have a large number of straight listeners to this program. Well, the program that precedes this is a very popular long-term program and has a huge number of listeners. And we gratefully inherit a large number of their straight listeners. So it's you're talking to an interesting mix of folks tonight, quite frankly.
Which is great. I think that's what it's meant to be. And I think we may, no pun intended, we're going to set the record straight this time. About the
Alex,
music, right?
That's great. That's a great line. Alex, we have a caller. Jim is on, I would guess, line one. Jim, welcome to Strictly Confidential, Jim.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Hello, sir.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
I'm here.
Alex?
We're here.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the Amazon under Gazebo. Can you suggest any of the CDs they have? They have the Best of Gazebo, and then they have Portrait.
Portrait is excellent. Portrait is a collection of remixes. So what you hear in Portrait is basically all the classic songs slightly redone to more of a modern style. I would look for classics. It's a blue cover with the yellow sort of tint to it.
Right.
And I think it's an Italian. I think I would stick with this classic with the original sound, and I think the classics is excellent.
Okay, is there anybody here that does not now completely agree with me that this man is one of the leading authorities on this type of music? Is there anyone on the planet that doesn't get it at this point? The man's able to tell Jim the album cover, the color to look for. You blow me away, Alex.
Oh, Peter, you're too kind.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I would recommend that, and I think probably the original work of Gazebo would be the best. I think even though his remixes are excellent, but the original work I think it's really true. To
so
style
I'm
of
looking
music.
At Portrait by Gazebo. You would suggest that also?
Which one? I'm sorry.
Portrait.
Right, Portrait CD. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I think it would be just Gazebo by Gazebo. It's his first album, and it's just such a classic. I think on my site, if you look to the voice off section, which is you see all those names and that none of them really necessarily would correspond to any of the artists, but those are the real names. And Gazebo's name is Paul Mazzolini, and if you click on him, you will see his entire discography, what he did, and whether he sang solo or did a back vocal, and you can look at the particular albums, and I think this sort of demystification tool.
We take
the mystery out of at least we attempt to. And so the fans who really reconnect with this music can sort of go in and find themselves, because this is what I was missing myself when I started to rebuild my collection. I wanted the information, and unfortunately it was no one to talk to, and now it's a little bit easier. I think the availability of this music is a lot easier.
Well, listen, I really appreciate your being a guest on this program, and I've certainly enjoyed your music and also your discography, and it brings back a lot of very good memories, and so
that's
some
great.
Of the
Thank
songs
you,
I
Peter.
Do recognize.
Thanks. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And listen, I thank you for being on this program, and Peter, thanks a lot for doing that, okay?
Yes, Alex, don't go.
Don't
go. No, I'm
here.
Please.
Okay.
Absolutely. My pleasure. It's my pleasure, Jim.
Okay. Okay, thank you for calling, Jim, and good evening to you. Wow, Alex, you certainly handled that one nicely. I would have been like, okay, but like, what's the web address, and let me go look and see what's on it.
Well, you know, that's what my wife's always saying. You know, we need to build another room just to house all these records. And we manage.
Well, you know, Glenn was just saying in the chat room that his partner Ken was mentioning to him that he ought to do some sort of a big dance party, some sort of regional slash. I'd travel for that. Could you imagine if you two got together and did something like that? Is that something that might be in the works?
I think it could happen. In fact, I will be seeing Glenn shortly in September. I'm going to be in San Diego, and Glenn was very gracious to meet me and we'll have some dinner and talk about things. And I'm certainly going to bring some music and I would have loved to be a part of it. I'm not a very good live DJ, but I can do a little cheating. I could pre-mix things in my home studio and do that. But I would have loved to be a part of it. It's
oh,
really
God,
a lot of
so
fun.
Oh God, so would I. I would travel across the country to go to something like that. Honest to God, I can't imagine a better experience. It just would, if you love it, you're just stone cold in love with it, aren't you?
Exactly right. Absolutely. And in fact, the parties, the called Itala parties, they've been one of the most recent one was hosted by Eventi d'Azzurro, which is really, it's a tremendous group of dedicated fans headed by Marcel van der Belt, but we call him affectionately Marcello, Don Marcello, and he knows every every Italian artist who is who of Italo Disco. He knows him personally. So on the 25th anniversary, actually on the 20th anniversary of Eventi d'Azzurro, they hosted a great party in Mantova when they invited many Italian disco musicians who are still around, who were available, and that was a tremendous, tremendous event. Unfortunately, I couldn't attend. It's just the timing of it is really bad for me in May, but I basically got all the information from friends and the photographs and the videos, so that was incredible. That's the party to attend to die for any Italian disco fan.
Alex, I should tell you that one of your fans who follows your website and who knows of you from Brazil has just joined us in the chat room. He's or she is here for your interview explicitly. Just so you know.
I appreciate it.
Well,
very much appreciate it.
I knew that folks were out there, that we have a whole different types of we have a whole new range of listeners this evening, so I love it too. Tell us another music story. We want more.
Oh, sure. There's lots. It's really what there's always a great discussion among the fans. And what is that? What is the record that one single record can really define the best, what Italo disco is? And as you know, there are three different parallel dimensions, as we spoke about. There is a classic Italo radio friendly, more of a sweet melancholy kind of music, or there is club cosmic music, which is real weird, kind of a slow stomping, and then there is electro, which is really minimal, kind of a raw sound. So how can you please all the people and really find the common ground? And the common ground is found, actually, was recently, I ran a poll on my site, and slightly over 250 responded, and the song unanimously, I would say in the 50% of the 40, high 40s, which is pretty much big dominant, was selected as Mico Mission, which is, the real name is Permetti. A really great artist. He's still performing. He was recently at the party as well. And the song is "How Old Are You?" So if Agnes could cue the song, you would hear what every fan or most fans agree that would be an Italo anthem.
Thank you.
Alex, that is fabulous. That is just fabulous. And I have to tell you, I have never heard it before. And I would kill to have a copy. Yes, it's just absolutely amazing to me. You
absolutely.
And Glenn have both.
That's going to be arranged. But what is amazing, Peter, and in the same time, how catchy and happy this song is, right? If
yeah.
you really take really close attention to the lyrics, it borders an up to absolute nonsense. You know, I to this day, you know, I've been listening to the song for over 20 years, and I'm thinking, what is he really singing about? What, you know, how old are you? What is he trying to hook up with some underage the girl? I don't know. It's just kind of funny.
It is just, in a way.
I have no idea. It makes
it's funny.
The sky is blue.
Absolutely.
And just makes no sense.
No, it really doesn't, but in a way there's some sort of emotional connect to it that it almost does make sense in a very happy way.
Right. It's a very happy, and you know, and I think there's always also a discussion that among the fans is Italian disco, is it really intelligent or really stupid? And people have a good point, because a lot of lyrics are kind of really not too clever, not very you know, not very meaningful. Not that I would imply that the Beatles have the most meaningful lyrics every song, but they do. But also Italo disco has some really featured tremendous lyrics, and I think Gazebo had some good ones and bad ones, but mostly good ones. And not as a point of criticism, but one of his songs, which I think is really great song, and most people would agree with me that you can't imagine Italo disco without Love in Your Eyes, which is a song. But here's a quote from the lyrics. It's like you're just a damn sequencer digital delay. And as Vince DiGiorgio said, that it could have been just a pop perfect song you will ever hear, but with that lyrical content, it definitely will not go down in history as you know, as the best lyrical content. And
yes,
in the
but
same
in a
time,
way,
you have Mr. Zhivago, "Tell by Your Eyes," which has tremendous, tremendously powerful lyrics.
Now the lyric about the "you're just a digital delay," was that in the last song that we just heard, the one about how old are you, that track?
No, that's another song by Gazebo.
Oh.
The song is called Love in Your Eyes. Also, it's a great song, great music, but the lyrics, in fact, when I make some mixes for myself, you know, for my car, and I would always take the instrumental version instead of the vocal version, or cut the words out, that particular piece, because it kind of bothers me. I don't know.
I see. Well, my take on it is that in the same way that MTV, watching a video of a music track, kind of hardwires the meaning of the song into your mind, because the video is obviously telling you what the story is without having to use your imagination at all, the lyrics that disconnect, that are not any sort of a logical flow, allow you to do the same thing with the lyrics of the song. You know, video is not important here, relevant to that, but I'm just saying that it allows you to, it means what it means to you. It makes it more personal to me. I love it.
Right. And the thing about Italo disco videos, some of the videos that I've seen on YouTube are nothing short of frightening. And in fact, I'm so even scared to watch this, because I want to listen to the music and imagine it as I would be imagining it in an ideal world if they had that really big budget and it would make a really good production. But I think some of the classic pieces, like for example, Fun Happy Station, you know, it's a great song to listen to, but if you ever go to YouTube and look at the video, it's frightening, silly, it's just so bad.
Ah, then I will never go there to see that video.
Yeah,
I don't
see it, and I stopped. Actually, on my site, there are people, the fans keep digging out this new Italo disco clips, video clips, and post it out. And sometimes I go and watch, and I'm thinking, oh my God, it's frightening. But some are really great, particularly Gazebo is really charismatic, very debonair, and he's Alex Chopin and masterpiece. He's great. He's a very camera friendly vet. For example, another example is Rose and her song Magic Carillon, which is a tremendous record, but the video is absolutely frightening. It's just so frightening. It's just
Before I forget, there's two things I need to do that are Billy Shears related. One is I have a message for Billy Shears to caller Jim, who called earlier, that caller Jim, you should listen to Billy Shears' show this coming Saturday night because there's something for you specifically on that. And also to you, Alex, We have a man that he's our music guru here. His name is Billy Shears. He does a radio show on through this network at 9 p.m. on Saturday evenings. I call him the world's most fabulous straight guy. But you are well on your way to claiming that title from Billy Shears, I should point out. But
Thank you, Peter. It's a great tribute. It's a great credit to me, and I don't know if I deserve it.
Well, I do want you to.
Thank you.
I do want you to contact Billy Shears. Stop by, if you would, BillyShearsMusic.com, and that's BillyShears, I believe, BillyShearsMusic.com. And see, every week Billy has a different guest. What it is, you can write a commentary on a piece of music, and you send in the track with the commentary, and it's posted, and it runs for that particular week. Of course, it's all archived and scrolls down. I know Glenn has done one. I've done one or two. Several people around the network here have been the featured commentary. I would just love to see you do some of these on Billy Shears' site.
I would have loved to do that. Absolutely. Thanks for referral. I will. That's great fun.
I will send, after the show concludes, I'll drop you an email with a link to the site. Billy Shears would love to have you. I can just guarantee you that. There's no question. You could do as many commentaries as you want.
Yes, that's a great opportunity. And I love to do it. Maybe I'll be able to surprise Billy with some tracks that he hasn't heard yet.
You might be able to. Billy seems to know a whole lot about a whole lot of things, but if there's any man on the planet that could do it, Alex, you're the one.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Appreciate it. That's a great credit. It's a great credit to me.
Well, you deserve every bit. I don't just make this stuff up. I tell you exactly what I think. The network will tell you that I have many times gone a little bit too far in saying exactly what I think.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I enjoy it.
It's very much appreciated. Are there some more musical tracks on the list? I hope so, because I don't want to run out.
We have another track that I've sent to Agnes, and that's the track is by Ryan Paris, and the song is Dolce Vita, and which is this song has really particularly interesting history. It was written by Gazebo and Pierluigi Giambini, and they brought the song to Baby Records, and they turned it down. They didn't like it. Freddie Nadjer said, "No, that's not the song we want." So they went around and decided, well, we need to look for a really dynamic, really good-looking singer. And they found a gentleman, Fabio Roscoli, he's a.k.a. Ryan Paris. He was really good-looking guy, real charismatic, blue eyes. He had a little bit of an accent, but it didn't bother them. So they sold that song to Disco Magic label, that record was the biggest selling record in Italo disco ever. I think they sold 10 million copies of that record, and I'm thinking, what a mistake for Baby Records, wasn't it? So that song, probably what I would say is if you don't poll the fans, but if you just play it, I think most mainstream people would really appreciate that song and really like it. And I love the song. I love the sound, too. So if we could cue the Ryan Paris Dolce Vita, that would be a great thing.
We are walking like in a Dolce Vita. This time we got it right. We are living like in a Dolce Vita. Gonna dream tonight. We are dancing like in a Dolce Vita. With lights and music on. Our love is made in the Dolce Vita. Nobody else.
Amazing. That song has always been. I've always loved that song, and
isn't
there were several
song?
Versions of it. This particular version is very, very good. There was another version back in the 80s. I who knows? It was one of the tracks that's lost along by the wayside. I can't, but it's always been one of my very favorite songs. And Glenn Rivera in chat room points out that it sounds a lot like Masterpiece.
Right, but well, because it came from the same stable, Pierluigi Giambini and Paul Mazzolini. It's just a different voice, but isn't that just a beautiful piece? And it was number one in Holland, it was number two in Sweden, number three in Germany in charts.
Amazing, just amazing
that song
stuff.
At the time.
I don't think anyone who's listened to this program has not learned something that they had no idea. I know I have. Tell us about Giorgio Moroder, if you would. We haven't talked
sure.
about him a lot. He has always been an idol to me. The man's just amazing.
Yes, I'm a big fan myself, and that's in a way when I started to go clubbing, I was still pretty young, but I would go. A friend of mine was a DJ, so he would get me in the booth. But I want to tell you first that the DJing back in Russia, from what I've heard, it was nothing like you would hear in Trocadero Transfer or in the 12 West or in a Paradise Garage. No, it was different. So the DJ would just play records from one to the next, and with no blending, we would rap a little bit, announce. But I would listen to all this new music, and what fascinated me was Giorgio. And Giorgio is just that, he just had that vocoder. It was total mystery. He had that energy. He is just totally different sound, and a very unique, very identifiable. And I think that he's also Italian, living in Germany. You know, a little bit of his creativity was showing in his work, and I think he was the biggest inspiration to many Italian disco musicians. There, in fact, a number of them just cited that he, when they've heard From Here to Eternity, and I think it was 1977, I believe, and they felt that was just the ticket. It was a little bit less funky, but more electronic sound, and it was all segued. The entire A side of that LP was mixed, basically like a DJ would mix songs. And it was so innovative. You just listening to one song to another, and that constant beat keeps on going. That was just absolutely amazing with that galloping bass line. And I think everybody. You know, I think everybody who loves know that his work with Donna Summer was really a seminal work in disco music, and it was just a groundbreaking. But I think for Italian disco, the inspiration came from Here to Eternity. And actually, there are two covers that I know of one done by Mauro Farina in his band Hananas. And Mauro Farina is considered by many Italo Disco fans as absolute king of Italo Disco. His voice is tremendous. And Peter, I didn't know that we would go more extensively in time. I would have definitely submitted Farina's track to Agnes, but maybe I will do it for Bill. You know,
I would love to have you back. Also, you can do it for Billy Shears, but I would love to have you back absolutely. And I do tend to keep people. Just please don't go.
as long as you host me, I can talk about it forever. But I appreciate it. So in another one was done by another artist, Marcello Catalano, a very talented guy. But his alias was Colby, from Here to Eternity. A little different take, definitely a little bit more ladies, but still, this song just keeps coming back. You know, in the covers, keeps coming back because it just, I think the inspirational power of that song is just undying. And I think that with Giorgio's inspiration, and I think he's kind of a trailblazer of that electronic sound for the Europeans. And I think he really paved the way for Italo Disco and for all that more kind of technological music.
Well, I can honestly say that looking back, every time there has been a track that I have just thought was fabulous and that I was enamored with, I would always look and it would always somehow or another Giorgio was involved with it in some way. I agree with you. He's magical. I should point out too, we have Jim is on the line. Jim wants to talk to you again, Alex. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Listen, I'll just be very quick, but this has been a wonderful trip through Hands of Nostalgia. You mentioned 12 West?
I think, did
sorry,
you mention...
what was it?
Did you
West,
mention 12
New York
West?
City?
12 West.
12 West.
Yeah.
Yes.
West. Disco,
that's the club.
Yeah, I've been there. People used to just wear PE clothes and T-shirts.
Right.
And, you know, there was no alcohol served. It was, you know... other things to serve, but no alcohol. But look, this has been great. And Giorgio Moroder, I mean, didn't he do like Midnight Express and
right.
Cat People?
Cat People, and, right. All that haunting music with a really strong kick drum. And it just mystery spreads, I think, is
and American Gigolo, too.
Right. In fact, that Giorgio and I think another German outfit, Kraftwerk, were really, really, really big.
I know them well.
And, you know, and the Kraftwerk was, I read somewhere that, you know, Kraftwerk went in one, in New York City at the time, they went in one of the clubs and they're listening to their song. I think it was Trans-Europe Express. And the song just
right.
keeps on going and going and going. And they look at each other, this is our song, but this is not our version. So the DJ... it had so much creativity and looped things together. Did like a total remix, like 10-minute version of a 3-minute 30-second version, and I think of the original song. And I thought that's what makes you know the dance music, disco music, or Italian disco music is so unique. It becomes an instrument that people with creativity can play.
Absolutely, and you mentioned one other artist, Brian Ferry. And I can remember when he started out with Roxy Music.
Right.
And I went through Country Life, Virginia Plain, and Avalon,
right.
and a lot of the stuff that he did. And then on his own, I have a lot of his stuff here. But, you know, this has just been wonderful. And I thank you for your time. And I'm going to let you go. And
absolutely.
You take care.
Thank
God
you.
Bless.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. You have the same effect on me, Alex. I've got to tell you, you are welcome back on this program at any time. At any time, just send me a track, and I will say it's from you. In fact, I encourage you to call and introduce it. I've not seen this much interest from the chat room. Well, they're always interested, but they're genuinely entertained and interested by the things
well,
that you have to say.
That makes it so much worthwhile and exciting.
Well, I have to say we're nearing the program end, and I've asked you so many questions. I'd I do want to just open it to allow you to say what you would like to say there. There may be points that you'd like to make that I haven't allowed because I've been questioning you.
Well, I think it's just, Peter, you've been so gracious, you're such a gracious host, and I enjoyed our dialogue. I just wanted to say that one thing about Italo disco is it's really terribly unhip. It's not what you would call cool music, and it was like that. It got a lot of beating from the critics and the music fans alike, but somehow it keeps managing to endure and keeps on going, and hopefully, you know, my site is just a tribute to all the artists that you put a lot of soul into their work and unfortunately didn't get much recognition for it. And I think probably that's the appeal of Italian disco, is that something that as if you're a beginner musician, you probably feel that you can do it yourself. You know what I mean? Something you can probably do. And the records don't sound very sophisticated, lush. They kind of sound a little primitive. And as Pet Shop Boys mentioned, as Neil Tennant gave an interview to Record Mirror, I think in 1985, and that's what he said, that it's just those records sound like a punk record. The Italians go and get just very excited about the most banal sounds, and at the time the Pet Shop Boys felt that they're really attracted to those sort of sounds and rhythms, and I think that's probably one who wants to take a journey into Italian disco, they would need to understand that they won't found any brass and bass and really marvelous matan vocals. They'll find something else, but they found very soulful, very creative music that might inspire you to do it yourself. And I think that's probably a great, at least it can make you happy, and it'll make a good day, or a great music for exercise, or a great drive.
That is an absolutely wonderful summary. I appreciate it. And again, Alex, you're welcome back on the show anytime. I intend to stay in touch with you. I certainly do, as I do with Glenn. You've both been.